I'm Wayne Morioka. I'm a senior art appraiser. I'm a senior member of the American Society of Appraisers, and that's all I do. 6 days a week, I am an art appraiser and an art consultant for about close to 43 years now. Yeah.
Okay,
my name is Andres Harnish. I have a business called Andres Harnish Brokerage. I'm a dealer for art, antiques, jewelry, and collectibles, and have in the last year also become a personal property appraiser. So I basically deal in anything that's beautiful and people love all over the world to buy from here, and we'll basically ship it wherever they are. And I work a lot with Wayne together. He is the appraiser that I'm using oftentimes, and now I do some appraising myself.
Hi, I'm Joyce Okano, and I am the volunteer president of the Friends of the Hawaii State Art Museum. And I have been doing this with the board for over a year now. And before that, for 31 years, I was with Chanel, running the operation in the West Coast, and transferred all of my learnings to this position when I retired to take care of my parents.
We're getting ready for the Hawaii Master Artists Show. And we'd like to prepare people for the experience of the show and the sale that's going to accompany it. You know, tell me what you think about this. Art collectors. Art collectors are born, not made. Is that true?
I don't agree. I think anyone that is just around art and or has friends or family that are interested in art or grows up around pieces that hang on the wall that they like and are just part of, you know, their upbringing, when they, I think, move in their own four walls and either inherit or buy their first piece of art, I think there's, it's really something that can grow. And obviously there are people that grow up with no art in their homes and they may just never miss anything. But I think a lot of the people that I meet just started over time. There are some collectors that are born collectors, and but they oftentimes don't just collect art.
What do you think about that, Wayne?
I would generally agree. I think the first process is that many times, you know, when even if you're surrounded by art, you know, at your, you know, when you're growing up at your home, you really don't look at things. You know, people, they say, oh, it's grandma's painting or it's, you know, my father's painting. It just hangs on the wall. You know, it could be a lamp, you know, or an object or a photograph. It doesn't mean anything until you really start to look. And maybe that's the very first step in, you know, becoming interested in art, just to start looking. And then when you start looking and then you say, oh, I like this, I don't like this. And then the second question after that, why? Why do you like something? Why don't you like something? And sometimes it's better to maybe examine what you don't like, because you learn maybe more from what you don't like than what you like. It's easiest, of course, to, you know, just to look at things that you like. That's great. But many times, one of the early exercises that you have in art history is to write about something that you cannot stand in terms of an art. And you start thinking about why you don't like it. And sometimes at the end of the semester, your professor or instructor asks you to write another paper on the same object. Is there a difference? Do you see things through a different light? So the same thing is with looking at art. Look, ask, and see what you like, but also what you don't like, because many times that'll give you some direction. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Do you collect art?
I collect Asian art just because I'm one of those collectors that was just born. This is something that I always like to do. I also create art. And if you ask me how I started, maybe the creation of art, maybe that's in that person. I don't know, but I suspect so. But as far as collecting art, since I was very, very little, I've been collecting art. And primarily Buddhist art, because I was just naturally attracted to that from very little. It's almost like a memory when I see things. It's very easy for me to understand that aspect. And, of course, from there, it just started growing to all aspects of art contemporary.
What was the first piece you got?
Gosh. I would say it was an 18th century Japanese vase with a dragon on it. I was maybe 12 years old. That was my first purchase. So I started fairly young, I think.
You saw it and you liked it?
Yes, exactly. Somehow, just spoke to me, and I still have it.
Do you still like it?
Yes. But, of course, that's not necessarily true that, you know, you're going to buy something when you're young and still like it. But in my case, the first piece I bought, the first serious piece that I bought, I still have and I still like.
Andres?
I grew up in East Berlin, in East Germany, behind the wall. And the first thing that I collected were Matchbox cars. And I had, when we had people come in, friends from the West came, they brought always one Matchbox car. And I remember I built a shelf for it, and it was my most prized possession. And I loved it. I just loved it. And then another thing that brought me closer to what I'm doing now is just my grandparents had a business. My grandfather was a motorcycle repairman and had a extensive giant storage of parts and in an old warehouse. And I was spending hours and hours going through it and trying to find treasure. And so when I then finally ended up here and had, started my business, I basically I sell things. I mean, that's kind of my I help people sell things, and and I sell a broad selection of things. So I handle an enormous quantity of different things, and with being exposed to all these different items that come just through. It can be from a hyperbaric chamber to a Japanese woodblock print, or you can't even think as far as it goes, and you just realize, Wayne was always someone that helped me in the beginning, still to this day, identify things, and he always pointed out to me, I mean, look at the workmanship, look at the detail on this, and here, look at this print in comparison to this print, and so for me, the more I deal with things, the more interesting things I find, and the more interested I'm getting. And so there are, for me, is it so my wife always laughs about it, because I have certain things that I follow for a while, and then after I've kind of oversaturated, I move on to something else, and that really also depends on what comes new in. So for me, Wayne is very much steady in his collecting, and there's obviously also he sees once in a while something workmanship wise that's just incredible, that he may also just keep even if it's not exactly the lane that he usually is after. For me, I love things that have age, and I love things that have a story. And a big part for me is when I get a piece, I always imagine the artist that painted it or the person that carved it 500 years ago, if they could see where that piece is now. And I'd love for these pieces to speak to me. I mean, because they've gone through so much more than a human, and because a human lifetime is only, 100 years at the most of the time, much less. And so for me, I have a real connection with a lot of the pieces, and I really love to be in a position with my business to have them only visit me, because if I could keep it all, I would be a hoarder. That's in... short.
And these people who bring things to you, mm-hmm. they've loved them, they've had them.
Sometimes they just inherit them and don't love them. Would say the three groups of people that I'm working with are either people that are it's mostly people that are looking at their possessions and reevaluating if they want to keep them. Three reasons for that is disease, downsizing before you move into a retirement place, divorce. I mean, so I always say I come usually to the party when it's not real fun. And there is people that part with things that they are very treasured, but they just can't keep them. And there's other people that inherited things or that, got an estate that have absolutely no connection to the things that say whatever you want to do with it. So it's really the whole range of emotions can be involved.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, right.
It's a world in itself. And
It's a slice of life, basically.
It is.
And you're actually entering their lives, an appraiser too. You're entering at very critical moments. right? Like you said, death is a common one, divorce.
Cancer, you know, I mean, where you basically you look at your life and you think, okay, all the things that were important to you now are just not that important anymore because now it's about your family, about saying goodbye to your friends. You just reevaluate. And I really love that part of our job a lot, too, because you do meet people at vulnerable times in their life, but they also oftentimes open up to you in a way that they wouldn't even do with their family just because they're exposed, they're out there, and they just...
And they're looking,
yeah. And so it's I think as an appraiser or as a responsible dealer, you have to help them really make the right decisions because I always say when something is sold, it's gone. I mean, and when I have people that are not sure, I always say, you know, get yourself a place where you can store it for a while and really see, is it something that you really want to part with? I have people that get rid of paintings of their ancestors just because they're giant and they can't accommodate them anymore. And there's a great amount of guilt involved in parting with them. But I think as a responsible collector, you have to understand that at the end, you are also only the keeper of the things for a very short time. And with something old comes responsibility. I mean, I hate when someone has a 300 or 400-year-old painting and has no windows in there in their house, and they have termites crawling all over it, and they're falling apart. And I think that's really important. I think if you're a true collector, it's not quantity over quality. It's get few pieces and take care of them, and you know,
and if you're not able to take care of them, maybe it's time to really seriously consider.
Yeah.
Selling it or moving it on or donating it.
Because we
look at the objects as having, you know, like people in a way, you know. So when I go to a new estate or a new meeting a client for the first time, the first thing that's very important is to get a sense of where they are and why are they calling you. And then depending upon what their situation is, you know, and then, of course, then you talk about their objects, too. But you're actually dealing on two different levels. One is a personal level and the other is the object. And there is this gray area that the two are mixing.
Absolutely.
Right?
There's a lot of people that for whom their collections are like children. I mean, they're so. And if you take these away or you don't handle them in the right way, it can really that you can have very strong reactions that are sometimes coming, you know, where you're kind of thinking, where is that coming from? But it's just people have looked at these and have treasured these and are oftentimes not happy with the situation that they're in. And you're kind of sometimes the messenger. You don't shoot the messenger, even if what he tells you is not exactly what you want to hear. I think overall it's usually very positive, especially if you can give them various ways of looking at it and really making up their mind. But it's a lot more than just things. I mean, there's many layers of emotions involved in that, and you have to be a reader of that too. And if you don't read it right, you can sometimes close a door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's like any profession, whether it be a doctor, a lawyer. You know,
absolutely.
There are many, many different levels that you have to deal with a client. You know? And so you just have to try to be as, of course, sympathetic as possible, but try to understand the total situation. And so that's why we always ask these questions. And once we have a clear understanding of what is involved, you know, what is the total picture, not just the objects, which is fine, but the total picture, then we know how to proceed and how to advise the client, what to do, to sell, not to sell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Make sure that they talk to the family.
Right,
because,
exactly.
You know, sometimes family members have looked at a painting or a print or an object for decades and never said anything because they didn't want to be tacky. And then someone, says, you know, get rid of the junk. And I say that's the typical Hawaiian way to say it's just junk. And then the family comes in the next time and they're heartbroken because they extra didn't say anything. So we always encourage it, especially when we have older clients, to make sure with their families first before they part with things that these are not things that are treasured and they don't know about it.
So then you're not in charge of finding people to buy things, but how do you appraise a painting? What do you look for?
Well, it depends on what the painting is, you know, but like anything, first of all, we have to identify what it is, whether it's which country, which area, what kind of paintings we're talking about. let's say we're looking at a Japanese painting.
Let's say local artists.
Local artists. Well, you know, who is the artist?
How old is the painting?
How old is the painting? And then after that, in that artist's body of work, where does it fall? Is it a good example? And, of course, for the value, how marketable is it? Does it have a pleasing subject, you know, a nice subject, an attractive subject?
What would some of those be?
I mean, you know, here for local art, you know, I mean, you have, let's say, an old Hawaiian painting, you know, of a beautiful, you know, a pristine landscape with, you know, grass shacks on the beach and beautiful, you know, outrigger canoes. And you know, you have people that really love that romanticized way of Hawaii. And if it's by a noted artist, and you look at the secondary market sales, you look at in their body of work, as Wayne just said, you know, where is it? I mean, some artists did still lives of flowers, then did a couple landscapes, then did some portraits. The portrait may not be as much valued if it's not by an important person or by a, you know, person that people are after in terms of resale as maybe a beautiful landscape. Or then sometimes you had periods when floral still lifes are very much in style, and then the floral still lifes are maybe worth more. And an important part, you know, which was for me very interesting when I, you know, was learned these things, is that an appraisal is always just worth good for a certain period of time. Not the information, that the information changes, but the valuation can change. And if you watch Antiques Roadshow, for example, and you watch, which a lot of people do, and you see when they have a show from 10 years ago, and then they have one of these, and let's see how the prices have developed, and sometimes they go up, and oftentimes they go down. Mm-hmm. There's just changes in a marketplace that happen. And right now, I think we're in a period where a lot of the strong collectors are parting with their collections because they're just reaching an age where they are need to downsize. And I think what we're experiencing right now, I think part of the reason that we're here right now is to get the younger generation, maybe the millennials that everyone I was talking about so negatively, but I like them still, that they may not have 40 paintings in their house, but still have an appreciation for an original piece of art, and also go to the museum once in a while because there are.
And the important thing is to start.
Exactly.
And to start looking.
Yeah.
The other thing to remember in terms of value is that, you know, many times people will come and say, oh, this is such a rare subject for this particular artist, it's unusual. That works negatively in terms of art valuation. What you want, classically what you want, is a good example of what the artist is known for. So let's say that, you know, this artist is known for paintings of beautiful women. You want that subject, a beautiful woman, a really good one. You don't want a landscape by that artist. Mm-hmm. You want something which is that artist is known for. Mm-hmm. That will trump everything else. Yeah.
And I think one other important thing that Wayne told me right in the beginning when I started this, and I think that's the same for collecting as also for, he said, when you start collecting, buy things that you can afford, and you will make your mistakes in the beginning. And at the beginning, it will cost you less. If you start at a much higher level collecting, let's say it means a painting for $10,000 or $20,000, and you don't really know yet what you're doing and you haven't done it for a while, you may end up buying something that is not really, you know, worth as much. So I think if you start at a level of $200-$300 or $50 at sales, you first of all realize what you like. Second of all, you get a feel for things. You know what to look for. And then when you end up buying something in $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 range, you have already some experience. I think there's a lot of people going out have never done any art buying and that buy themselves an investment painting, not knowing anything what they're doing. And it's the same as if you go in the stock market. You need to know what you're doing before you buy stock. Otherwise, you know, it's like lottery. I mean, you may win, but more often you don't. And so I think know what you're doing and learn early, you know.
And the thing is, you know, if you look at, you know, trends in art, no one has a crystal ball. Absolutely no one has a crystal ball. We don't know for sure that 20, 30 years from now, this unknown artist is going to be famous. The person might have talent, but it takes more than just talent,
absolutely,
you know, in terms of the art market. So it's a gamble. So the best advice we can give is buy what you like, because no matter what happens, you will always like what you bought.
And when I take on an art collection, I always say to the clients, instead of looking individual piece by piece, how much you get for it, how much you get back of your initial investment, I said, look at it as a wash. There's always going to be pieces, there are going to be some pieces that have appreciated, and there's going to be other pieces that have don't. And I think the worst is when people look an item by item when they're starting to downsize. And I know we're right now on the other end of the spectrum, but when they get really bugged down, and I always say the thing is that there are some pieces that just are more sought after than others, and you purchase the things that you liked, so it's wonderful that you have a nice mix of things, you know.
But how do people start? How do you start?
Well, I think that we have an event on May 4th and 5th at the Hawaii State Art Museum. The Friends of the Hawaii State Art Museum is having a Hawaii Master Artist Show and Sale, and we're working together with Wayne and with Andres because they are certainly experienced and are experts in their field, and they are contributing their time and expertise to us to price all of the works that we have for the show. We have over 100 pieces collected so far from very important collectors, and when I hear you talk about the various D's that people, deaccession their artwork. We've been very lucky in that we have a group amongst us, a strong art community that really, really believes in collecting art and being sure that the art, world, the industry is alive and there's careers in the future for artists here in Hawaii. And of course, Wayne and Andres believe that also. So that's why we're all working together. And we've been lucky to gather works from many different places for this sale. The D that I like to talk about is donation, because really so many of these people are donating the pieces, not because of a sad reason or an illness, but because they really believe that they want to help Hawaii's young people and new collectors start. So they've given us pieces to put into this sale of the really the master artists of Hawaii. We have some of the biggest names of artists, but also from the biggest names in terms of collectors. You know, we have Herb Conley, who is such a strong believer in local artists, and he's given us a number of very important pieces, and Henry Blackstad, who has been a collector for decades, as well as Satoru Abe. Satoru Abe is an avid collector, and he's donated a piece to us that was a gift to him by Bob Ochikubo, a fellow Metcalf Chateau artist. And, some of these pieces are being donated to us 100% donation to the Friends of the Hawaii State Art Museum, like Satoru, because he so believes in the cause of art in Hawaii.
Yeah. How did you start collecting, Joyce?
Well, I've always been a collector. I think I was born a collector, but,
collector of many
gosh.
Things?
Yeah, many things. Uh-huh. Yeah, many, many things. Crayons to seashells to beautiful stamps to, just things that were visually pleasing to me. But really, my collecting of local art started about 20 years ago. And I was used to going to so many beautiful museums in the world. I was very, very lucky, starting out at the Uffizi and Musée d'Orsay and such wonderful places, and coveting works that I couldn't afford. And it wasn't until a friend of mine in New York, who was an avid collector, told me that I should really start collecting what I can study and that I could afford and have access to. And so, of course, that was local art, and it was right in front of my eyes. But I was going to New York and Europe looking, and it was right here. So when I got started, it was just the biggest, biggest joy.
Wait a minute. How did you get started?
Well, I got started because my neighbor, Beverly Noah, who was a dear, dear friend, had Jean Charlot and John Young paintings on her wall. And so actually, that's where I got introduced to local art. And from there, meeting Satoru Abe, you know, was a big, jump in my interest level. And Harry Tsuchidana, I wish I had been able to meet Tadashi Sato. You know, I've heard so many wonderful stories about him, so I was a little late for that. But, you know, it's just been a pleasure. And this Hawaii State Art Museum is the only museum in the world that focuses on Hawaii's art and artists, and it's such a gift. So that's why the Friends of the Hawaii State Art Museum is doing this with the donations of so many generous donors giving up some of their prized possessions for the spirit of collecting and passing along works that they feel belong in somebody else's home now for their enjoyment.
And many of these artists that she mentioned, there are significant pieces being offered for sale.
Who, for example? You've seen them.
We have John Young. We have Tadashi Sato. We have Madge Tennant. We have Satoru Abe. We have Toshiko Takaezu, the potter. I mean, the list is...
Are these really good pieces?
No, these are very good pieces, and they represent the best artist that Hawaii has produced, basically, in recent times.
Yeah, absolutely. And I personally think you will see that there is not going to be just newcomers coming to that show. There is going to be Wayne and I were instructed by Joyce that we want to sell these pieces. So we don't want to have some big numbers just to have big numbers. We want to really get people excited. And so I think that's really the part that I really look most forward to, because you can go in a gallery and you can buy all these artists, but in a gallery you just pay significantly more money for them. And oftentimes people don't negotiate. I mean, so I think this will be a chance where I think current collectors that are looking for getting the chance of maybe scooping up the one or other collectible that they've always wanted and that they had never mm-hmm. a chance will be there. And I think there will be hopefully a whole bunch of new collectors that will mix and mingle. And hopefully there's going to be a real, you know, art communication going on between mm-hmm. between the generations. And
but getting their feet wet.
Exactly, getting their feet wet. And I think there's also going to be, I know that John Koga was instrumental in organizing this too. When we went to his house to actually look at the pieces and evaluate them, there was a wonderful group of young artists and or people that are interested in the arts were part of him. They were just a great team. And I think these people alone will probably make this event a success, because they're very much, they believe in the cause, they love what they're doing, and they really enjoy handling the art, because some of them have said, you know, I've never seen a piece like that in up close. And so that's, I think that excitement you can really feel.
You know, many times these young collectors, you know, when they're handling, you know, pieces, actually handling pieces, just the excitement.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
I guess when you get older, you get jaded, but to see things in fresh eyes.
No, but help me. I mean, what young collectors? Who are these people? What are they like?
They could be, there were a group of, I spoke to one young gentleman. He was a chef first, and in being a chef, he realized that he is very much interested in the arts and switched to art. I don't even know his name right now. It's just, you know, you hear pieces. We were very much focused on what we were doing, but there are art students. There are people that are artists themselves. You know, when you start being an artist, I think wherever you are, you have to be networking. I mean, because otherwise you're going to be living in a shack under the bridge, because, you know, Hawaii is a beautiful place. There's lots of subject matter that's very interesting. And I think we have a huge community of artists here. But for being financially successful, I mean, you know, which is just, you know, I always say every parent, when a child says, I want to be an artist, they say, you know, you have to learn a real job first, so that in case that doesn't pay the bills, that you can, you know, not come back and live in our basement, you know. And so,
or starve to death.
To death. And so I think that's why the group of people that I saw at the house were really a mixed group of people from all places, but what connected them was really just a joy in the arts and a joy handling the pieces and being part of this, because they look at their own future as, if we can get these people excited in art, we may actually create for ourselves a place where we can sell our own art. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
And then, of course, many of these young people have some museum experience. You know, young people, installers, private galleries.
Framers.
And then just listening to them, oh, I'd like to start my own gallery, which is a big dream. It's very difficult. But just the idea it's in their heads, is that's really remarkable, I think, because it takes a lot of
guts
yeah, yeah. And bravery.
And some
hardship.
Some craziness, too,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it's I think to be I think any gallery owner that's honest will say that, you know, the highs can be really high, but the lows can be also very low.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Since we don't have hardly any left here, there's
right.
a reason,
right?
What is going to prepare these people to buy art? What should they look for?
Should look for? I would just say just look. See what you like.
Exactly.
Does something appeal to you? Because many of the prices are very reasonable. You know, there are many of them, most of them, I think, are already framed. You don't have to think about framing, which is a huge expense. You know?
Yeah. It's so funny, as the framer usually say, when you buy a piece of art for little, they say, that's good, because now you're going to really spend money for the framing.
but many of these pieces are beautifully framed already. And so because... you know, framing, you know, even a small piece can be $400-$500 easily.
Yeah.
You know, and these pieces are framed. And we're sometimes not even thinking about the frame. We're looking at the art.
At the
right?
art, exactly.
And so they're really, in that sense, they're really priced to sell, especially to beginning collectors who want to have something to enjoy. That's, I think, the most important thing. So you should ask yourself, am I going to enjoy this? And if the answer is yes, well, heck, why not?
And I think you also don't have to look at it like from a, you know, will I love this till the end of days? I mean, you don't have to look at it. I mean, for me, is it so that oftentimes when I meet collectors and we're discussing their collections, there are things that you purchase in the beginning of your collecting that are later on, 10 years down the road, are just not anymore that important to you, because you have really figured out who you are and what you want. And I always encourage the collectors to move these things along, because at the end you have to maintain them. I mean, anything here in Hawaii that, you know, is works on paper, I mean, there's mold, there's mildew, there is moisture, even, you know, an oil painting. I mean, you know, it all takes care. And I think keep the things that you love and move the things along that are not as important to your collecting anymore. In that way, I really think it's a circle. It's almost like a, you know, it's you keep it moving. I mean, art wants to be seen. It doesn't want to just sit in a dark room and have some, you know,
have a sheet over it,
exactly. And once in a while, a sheet gets lifted and an insurance appraiser comes and says it's worth $500,000 more, in the best case. Yeah.
If I can also add that there's also Reuben Tam and there's Jean Charlot. There's Juliette May Fraser.
Let's picture a really sustainable environment for artists, collectors. Could artists actually live here and be supported by people who buy their work?
Well, there have been a few, but not that many. Yeah, especially in more recent times. Yeah.
Isn't there still the Hawaiian 0.1% of
the state foundation?
GDP.
State Foundation of Culture and Arts percentage for the arts program started exactly 51 years ago. You know, and Hawaii was the first state in the nation to have a percentage for arts legislated. So we're very, very lucky. And in fact, that's why the Hawaii State Art Museum exists, because there is money from the state buildings that designate the percentage for the arts. The problem is that the museum collects it, and they are placed in, you know, state offices and Department of Motor Vehicles and legislators' offices and libraries and so forth, but it's not marketed. So our role as the friends of the museum is to tell people, the residents and the tourists, about how wonderfully rich our culture is in Hawaii. The art history here is exceptional, and we have a wonderful collection, and it's free for visitors. So what more could you ask for?
And it's extremely diversified, because we come from all different cultures, right?
It's a melting pot.
It's a melting pot. And we bring with us, our parents and grandparents brought something. Sometimes it's not necessarily the objects themselves, but maybe an attitude.
Appreciation.
Appreciation.
Yeah. One person's beloved thing can be hideous to the next person. And the first thing that I had to learn in my business is not to judge anything, because the things that are the weirdest things oftentimes fly out the door. And I'm thinking, how is this possible? And then the things that I personally really love, sometimes no one else likes.
We have over 20 people to date that have donated pieces to us for this event. And one of them is the family of Jay Jensen. And, of course, Jay Jensen had a wonderful personal collection. And so we're so lucky that Joanne has given us all the local works in Jay's collection for us for this sale for new collectors to enjoy. And, you know, there's nothing that would have made Jay happier, I think,
absolutely,
than to share the wealth.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty crazy. I'm trying to picture somebody now buying something. This is the first thing they ever bought. It was $250. They take it home. They put it on their wall. Or maybe it's their cubicle at work. They put it on there. What's going to make them buy the next one?
You know, I think you look at this piece and you enjoy it. I mean, for most collectors, I look at something and I just really love it. I mean, when I have something new coming in, I usually put it. My wife is very particular about nails on the wall, so I would love to have just everything on the wall, but no, it's just not going to go if I want my wife to be happy. And I'm long enough married that I want that. So I put it usually just in a central place, and I look at it for a while, and I look at it in the morning and the evening, because different lights on the piece can make the piece feel different. I mean, Wayne, I think, thinks or has said to me before that there's pieces that have a soul. I mean, that have really, they have a presence, you know. So I think instead of going for quantity, I think get something, sit with it, you know, look at it and feel it. And when you've drunk out of that cup enough, then see if there's something else out there and
another flavor.
Exactly. It's like food. It's like a good meal.
You don't want to have the same meal day after day.
Exactly.
So it's like art,
you know.
You know, different things on the menu.
Yeah.
Something spicy, something sweet, something dessert.
Something abstract, something, you know. I mean, there's so many different things out there that it's really.
Yeah. So maybe like Chinese one day or Japanese, Indian, a good steak.
Should I worry about whether it goes with my room or anything?
I think that's, I hear that a lot. But eventually what happens is that your environment is what you create yourself. So as long as you're happy with what you see, I think it's fine.
I love eclectic.
Yeah. You
know?
You think it's eclectic, but maybe it's not. Mm-hmm. There's something that, you know, ties them all together,
exactly.
And it's you.
Exactly.
And that's who you're buying it for. You're not buying it to please someone else. It's yourself.
Yeah.
So if you create an environment that you're happy with, right, that you love to look at these pieces, hey, that's a perfect match if you ask me.
Absolutely.
I remember I was a little drunk when I brought my first artwork, and it just brought me incredible joy.
Mm. Not just that
still
evening,
sits.
But...
Yeah. You don't start out thinking, oh, I'm going to have a collection. At what point? No, you just don't, huh?
Well, there might be that odd person.
Yeah.
Most people know.
Exactly.
One becomes two, two becomes three, four.
Yeah.
And then pretty soon you have no collection.
Exactly. When you start hanging things in the bathroom or on the ceiling, you realize.
Well, yeah, I had one client that screwed paintings to the ceiling because he ran out of walls. It's quite bizarre.
Then you're not just a collector, but you might have a small problem.
Or the floorboard starts sagging.
Yeah,
yeah, right. Okay, sounds like you've heard of this. Some of this stuff. We pretty much worked these two guys over. Where do I get the best deals on local art?
At the sale.
Yeah. So I think that sale is going to be, I think, a great place. I do think that there is other venues like the Art on the Fence, like the various... not swap meets, but there are gatherings on the North Shore where on the weekend market people are offering things up, and I do think that I'm a part of the Honolulu Museum Fellows of the Museum, and there are constantly shows at the First Hawaiian Bank building at the Honolulu Museum that I can really recommend. I think the Honolulu Museum has in the last couple of years really stepped it up quite a bit, and if you're looking for art, you will find it. It's just if you're not looking, okay, you can say I didn't see anything. But if you're looking for art events or want to even become an artist and want to go to the Honolulu Museum and take a course, I mean, there's so many options. And if you go around through Kapiolani Park, you will see people like Mark Brown painting a painting of, you know, in the park. Or I mean, there's a lot of opportunity if you're interested and you have your eyes open.
And how do I hone my appreciation and my discernment?
How do you hone your appreciation?
I think that's too scientific, or it will just come.
Yeah, just ask questions.
Yeah,
ask a lot of questions. Especially when you first start looking at objects, you know, the question is, you know, what media, what technique are they using? So that's a kind of a, you know, self-learning process. And pretty soon you say, oh, this is an oil painting, or this is, you know, a graphite pencil drawing.
Woodblock print
or
etching.
Print, yeah. Or something. Yeah. Or this is just a commercial giclée, yeah, mechanically done, scanned or something like that. And you just go, yuck.
Yeah, what would you pay for a giclée?
I think Wayne and I can speak for both of us. I think giclées are an inexpensive way to enjoy
A reproduction.
But I think for us that are dealing with this, and for people that know artists, although there are artists that selling giclée prints too, you know, there's nothing. But I love German expressionists. I could never afford a real painting, but I can buy a print by Käthe Kollwitz or artists like that. The important part for me is actually that she handled the print. So I want to see her signature on the print. So then it is a piece of paper that went through the artist's hands. She didn't just create the design, but it went through her hand. She hand signed it. I think a really important part for me. As soon as you have a mechanical reproduction or any reproduction that may not have even gone through the artist's hands, it still is a nice picture, you know. But I mean,
yeah. So the question is: are you buying an image, or are you buying an artist's work?
Exactly.
I think that's two different things.
Yeah. Is it wall decoration? I mean, both can be wall decoration, but do you want to have a connection with the artist? And I think that only comes if you get something that's
the closest you get to the artist's hand, I think.
Yeah.
Still, you know, that's the bottom line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, what I'm hoping that a lot of the younger collectors will differentiate, because nowadays with the digital media, there's so much possible. I mean, you can print things on aluminum boards, on your surfboard. You can wrap your car in a piece of art. I mean, there's so many possibilities. And, you know, I would say there's nothing wrong with any of these. It's just when I look at the business and at the artists that are trying to make a living, you know, do something that's closest to what they actually did themselves, and instead of the further away you get, the less they actually will,
and the less spirit there is, I think.
I think, yeah.
Somehow.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can see we're fanatics, you know, so we're we have strong opinions.
Glad I asked that.
I think also a really wonderful opinion to learn more is to go to the museums. We have some wonderful museums in town, not just the Hawaii Seed Art Museum, but the Honolulu Museum of Art, you know, Bishop Museum. But at the Hawaii State Art Museum, we recently converted the gift shop that was in the building to a gallery gift shop. And so we are featuring local artists, crafts that are limited availability and very special in that store. So it's a great place. First Fridays to come down. We have valet parking on Richard Street from 5:30 to 9 o'clock every first Friday, and you get to see new works at really, wonderful prices. And the museum is open, so you can go upstairs and see what's upstairs. And also, there's another gallery called Ours on Montserrat that has been featuring a lot of new young artists. Mm-hmm. That has been doing a wonderful job of promoting and giving opportunities to purchase art.
I really wonder. I mean, I think I see a lot of artists who are thinking the only way I can make what I have just done available for the majority of people that I know is by making a giclée out of it.
I mean, I can certainly probably make a financial case for it. I mean, if you have a, work on paper, you know, every 10, 15, 20 years, you will probably have to get it cleaned or fumigated because it's going to be moldy. I mean, you know, the brown spotting on there, you will have to reframe, you have to remat, you have to clean, you have to demoldify, you have to termite tent. I mean, there's, you know, there comes, as I said, with your possession come, it's like a house. You know, I mean, you if you want to keep it nice and resell it one day, you have to keep it up. A giclée, I mean, think about a hotel. Instead of having, you know, 500 original pieces of art in their room with someone smearing tomato ketchup on the wall or whatever, that would have to go to a conservator that cleans it. A giclée, you print them up, you stretch them, you hang them up. If something happens, you have 47 more and you have someone in engineering can put it back together and put it in the frame. I mean, it's certainly, it makes it a lot more, it's like everything in this culture. It's a throwaway kind of thing.
Disposable.
It's disposable, exactly. An original piece of art, I mean, I have seen pieces that were in terrible shape and you give it to a good conserver and they can make this thing, I mean, not better than it was before, but you can certainly tickle things out and so that I sometimes think, wow, I mean, he had a magic wand. I mean, how is that possible? And you would never go through that for a giclée, even if the artist sat there and put some hand-painted accents on it. I mean, come on, who are you kidding? I mean, it's
a marketing tool.
It's just a marketing tool. And you know, when you have Waikiki galleries, when you look at some of the tourist art that's being sold where someone walks out with a $7,000 or $8,000 giclée in a koa frame and get a certificate that says by the time you're carrying it out of the store, it is already $3,000 more worth because it's a real collectible. And then you have these people call me, for example, 5 years later and say, you know what, it doesn't fit in our life anymore. What can you do? And then you tell them, it's a one-tier market. You buy it at the gallery, you know, after a couple of glasses of wine, and you just don't get that money back.
You still have a nice frame.
You still have a nice frame, exactly. And so that's the part, I think, where it makes sense to start off in an event like the State Art Museum.
And buy real art.
Buy real art, exactly. And there may be even some pieces in there that are not in the perfect condition. So, I mean, that will be taken into in terms of, you know, there may be a little bit of a spot on there. So I mean, you get it at a really reasonable rate, and you can see how it does, you know, and get your feet wet, you know, and don't buy giclées. Because what happens to me is actually I have oftentimes people let go of their collections
because
they represent an enormous value. I mean, think about it. You have a couple paintings that are worth $40,000 or $50,000 and they were around you for the last 50 or 60 years. Part of us helping our clients to
let go
is we'll make a reproduction that just for you. I mean, and then you can frame it and hang it on the wall. You still see the piece. But, you know, I always say if you have an art collection that represents $250,000 or $500,000 of value and the market is shifting and you're thinking, you know what, it may not be worth as much in 5 or 10 years from now. It makes sense to start looking and you know, saying if it's really just something that we love on the wall and we really don't see a big difference between an original and the reproductions are well done. You know, I mean, in the beginning, they were oftentimes losing color within a very short period of time. I think qualitatively now with the inks and everything, there is a lot possible.
And they can layer it and texture it. And
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I think in a couple of years, it's going to be impossible even for a good appraiser to tell the difference between an original.
It's getting harder.
It's getting harder. I mean, you know, you can always turn it over and see. I mean, if it's looking brand new on the back, it's not going to be 100 years old, you know, if it's not been relined or something. But
there's still a certain flatness. It's hard to express when you look at a giclée, no matter how good still, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen in the future, somewhat's flat.
Yeah.
They say that they can layer the colors, blah, 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 blah. Somehow it's still flat. You say, oh, even from a distance, something isn't right, yeah? Yeah, you know what I'm saying, yeah. I don't know what it is.
And oftentimes they're very shiny. For some reason, they really to make them shiny. And I'm always thinking, I don't want to have a mirror. I want to have a painting that I can see wherever I'm and be in the room.
And then sometimes, you know, you look. The first thing you look at is the coal wood frame.
Exactly. It's like you're always thinking, it's my eyes not going straight for the art. It's actually going straight for the giant
something is wrong.
and then the giant linen liner.
Exactly. and a beautifully gold certificate that says how wonderful the piece is. Exactly. I'm thinking, come on. I mean, really. You know, and I mean, you know, that's the same what I said to you early on about value. At the end, what's the first thing that you don't buy when the economy is not going well? It's art. I mean, you need to put gas in your car. You need to put bread on the table. You want to go out with your girlfriend to the cinema or whatever. But if you don't have anything on the wall, I mean, it's not going to kill you. So that's also always when these cycles go on. I mean, when artists have really struggled and gallery
and it's right owners. Now. Right now, they're really struggling and the art market sucks.
Yeah.
Right?
Because there's a lot of old art coming out now because the heavy collectors are parting. And then there's obviously an enormous quantity of new artists here that all have to compete. So it's, and you know, obviously as a collector, it's much easier to go into old art because you have auction results, you can see trends over periods of time of a new artist.
You can go to a museum and study their work.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, but with new artists, you're really sticking yourself out there. I mean, it's, you're not exposing yourself financially as much as with a more well-known. Yeah.
But for old art, of course, the problem is fakes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you
fakes of local artists.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
For some things like some people like Hitchcock, there are.
For Noel.
But I mean, Hitchcock I've seen.
Yeah.
Oh. And I've seen it on the internet.
Yeah.
How about your advice for collecting new, up and coming young artists?
You mean who? Or
who? Okay.
Oh, that's a little dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's it's again, I think what Wayne said is buy what you like and then just follow them and see where they're going because. These young artists
get acquainted with their art and see how they do it, and if you like it, then.
And another nice thing that I thought in that conversation that we didn't touch is that here in Hawaii everyone is so accessible. If you have in New York a show, I mean, these artists are, you know, coming on in a stretch limo and, you know, you can't even talk to them. Over here, the artists give you their phone number and please come in my studio and get to know me.
Most artists are fairly accessible, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so, and I think that's, because I think a lot of people that I know that started collect because they liked an artist, they met them, and they had a connection. I mean, it's with you and Satoru, I mean, you know, it's, or Harry Tsuchidana, I mean, you kind of like almost as adopt a child, I mean, you know, and that makes you kind of, I mean, you know, and I say that, you know, lovingly, I'm not saying that in any way accusatory, it's when you have that relationship with the artist and you are interested. I mean, I have an artist or an architectural renderer. It's just a small, interesting story that is in his 80s, and he always painted these little paintings of scenes of Hawaii. And he took care of his brother after his brother got ill, and when he passed away, he just looked at it, and he paints off of photographs, and he said, I'm gonna stop because there is really nothing. I have a hard time getting around. I can't. It's all internet now. I have to order all my supplies online. I can't do it. And I said, so let me order it for you. And I take the photos whenever I go around, walk around Diamond Head or whatever. I take the photos, and then I bring it to him. And he sits there, and since we started about 3 years ago, he painted over 100 watercolor paintings of scenes of Oahu, you know, which I love because there's a lot of places in Oahu that change, you know, the Rainbow Drive into Leonard's Bakery to, you know, the Kaka'ako where everything is being torn down right now. And there is, you know, I mean, we all basically in our lives have people that we're in one way or another support or who we're there for because artists oftentimes are... not all are very self-confident. I mean, there are definitely some that are, but oftentimes they're really struggling and, you know, to, are we doing the right thing? Are we missing something? And so when you're there and you can, artists are fun, you know, they're almost like not a different breed of people, but they're, they need to be loved. Otherwise they can't really, they don't produce good work.
You know, artists are all sitting at home going, oh, God, what should I do? What should I make? What should I paint? Is there anybody out there? What do they want to buy?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Answers, guys?
Create what you enjoy. And, I mean, you know, the one thing is for sure, every artist that I've, contemporary artist that I talk to always said to me, usually the art, when I go through a certain periods in my life and do one thing, you know, and until I can't see it anymore and then I move on, they said usually everyone wants what I stopped doing as soon as I started going to the next thing. I mean, you know, it's like Yvonne Cheng with the batiks. I remember always she said, should have had 30 or 40 in my closet that I didn't sell, that I could now sell for lots of money. Usually while artists are alive, financial success is not always right there. And I think, you know, people like Satoru Abe, for example, I think it must be incredible to have such a long lifespan and a career that you actually see, you know, the second or third generation now collecting your works and see how and reach a profile, too, that I think he enjoys very much, too, that he is one of the most lauded artists in town and wherever he goes, you know, he's a small statue but big personality and enjoys his fame, you know. It's so funny, when my wife met him at the yoga studio, she said, "You are dead Satoru Abe," the first time they met, because I always talked about Satoru and he did yoga at the same studio, and he just, she said, he grew like 2 or 3 inches and said, "Yes, that's me."
See that.
But you were talking about young artists. You know, there are a few young artists that are making, you know, quite a success of their lives. It's just, unfortunately, not here in Hawaii.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they have to go to New York or London to make it big. And it's almost like you return to Hawaii, well, then, you know, you're cutting off your career. Jean Charlot is classic. And he was with Diego Rivera and Siqueiros and, you know, doing so well. And a lot of people say that his value would be so much higher
if he had stayed
in Mexico, didn't come back to Hawaii. Yeah. You know, but Lawrence Seward is one who was in New York for 13 years and doing quite well. And, you know, his work is at the Whitney. Mm. And he decides to come back to Hawaii because of, you know, family. And, you know, so he says Hawaii people just don't buy his work, but they just don't know it because they've not been exposed yet. Paul Pfeiffer is another one. Paul Pfeiffer is huge in New York. National Public Television.
PBS.
PBS, yeah. I'm thinking NPR. PBS, you know, did the Art 21 on him even. And, you know, his prices are just through the roof. Ashley Bickerton is another one. Kalani Boy, you know, and he's...
Leo Dan, remember he was living... Leo Dan, the Chinese artist, was living here for years. And
right.
Then he moved to New York, and now he's in Beijing. His works bring millions now, literally.
So again, saying if you get early in, you can pick up a piece for very little that may 10 or 15 years from now has gotten, you know, ridiculously unaffordable, you know, and
in the meantime, you enjoy it.
Exactly.
You know, just love it.
I mean, that's always the chance. I mean, that's really always the exciting part. When you buy early, you don't know what happens to these people.
No.
I mean, you know, lots is possible. I mean, but you have to do it. You have to stick yourself out there and spend a couple hundred dollars.
And you're making an investment in the artist so that the artist can continue to do what they do best.
Yeah.
Eat.
Oh, thank you so much. You guys are great.